So I want to do a little recap of last week's talk around emotions. Now, emotions are one of the most critical things for us to bring into our meditation practice. We keep that kind of at arm's distance. We're really shortchanging the depth of our practice. Both not only the quality that it leads to investigation and understanding how suffering really shows up for us in a very personal way, but also we don't get that skill of how do we work with emotions when they're really a storm passing through us. And that's particularly what I want to focus on tonight, as we did last week, is those kind of emotional storms that threaten to sweep us off our feet, or we seem like we're almost drowning with intensity. And so how do we use our practice in relationship to that? So ideally, emotions can be like that poem that Rumi beautifully spoke about, that sense of the hand opening and closing, and that sense of balance. And our this grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to what you bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead there's a joyful face you've been wanting to see. Your hand opens and closes and opens and closes. If it were always a fist or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small contracting and expanding. The two are as beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. And I think that's a beautiful expression of when we become paralyzed, we're either stuck open or stuck closed. And how do we restore that opening and closing, that sense of balance, that natural flow of emotions arising and passing away? Now, we're in the midst of an intensity of emotion. That's the trick, is how do we come back to that? Last week, I shared what Ajahn Chah said about the two kinds of suffering. Because going into emotions sometimes is going into a depth of suffering that we hold. Some of the deepest pains, the deepest beliefs that we have. And even this might be historic, maybe these lifelong patterns and traumas, or it might simply be the irritation or the anger that just wells up when someone is rude to you, for example. But he spoke of these two kinds of suffering, the suffering which leads to more suffering, and the suffering which leads to the end of suffering. Okay, so the suffering that leads to the end of suffering, this is pointing toward that relationship to experience. And how we can, on one hand, relate to it, that makes more suffering, amplifies it. This is when the storm is just kind of feeding upon itself. It's building more and more momentum. And the second is the way of the practice, the way of the Dharma. So with suffering or with emotions, I suggested three ways to practice with them. And these are really interrelated, intertwined, and mutually supportive. Sometimes you find that one area is what you can kind of get a foothold in, and the other ones help you get deepen that foothold. Other times you have to switch to a different one. And these are based on my own experience as a practitioner and also working with students. So it's not a theoretical set of suggestions, but it's, I think, something that can be very helpful. So the first one is we have to find some sense of stability, some sense of finding where the ground is. Because often when we reflect, we've been lost in an emotional storm, we actually lose contact with the ground. We don't really know where our feet are. We're wandering around in a daze, overwhelmed, caught up in the emotional intensity and the beliefs around it. So trying to find that place of contact with the earth, to literally feel our feet on the ground, to feel a breath move through our bodies, to orient ourselves right here to this present moment. Because it starts to help us slow down. Emotions often have a sense of urgency to them, a sense of almost like it's an emergency that we have to do something with this right here, right now. Now, if we can remember that emotions aren't an emergency, they're just a very intense experience. It's a pausing. Okay, where's the present moment in the midst of all this? Emotions, of course, also are something that we take very personally. That's not, you know, almost the very nature of them. And learning to start to see them as impersonal is so critical. Because our emotions are really not who we are, although it feels like that. It feels like that's even the way we say it. I'm feeling so angry. I am mad. I am sad. I'm scared. I'm happy. It's like the self-defining definition of who we are, of what we are in that moment. And so this sense of finding that ground helps us to step back a bit to see, okay, this is just like a, literally like a storm moving through me. It has sensations, it has beliefs, it has emotions, but it's something that's arising and passing through. So how do we find that sense of ground? How do we find that sense of stability? You know, so literally first is maybe calling our attention to where the feet are, actually saying, what does that sensation actually feel like? Sometimes I almost kind of do a little bounce to feel the earth more solidly under my feet. Sometimes I focus on the breath, really exhaling, that sense of really focusing on that sensation with a little more emphasis to bring myself to presence, to find that sense of connection. Sometimes it's this sense of ground is expanding the focus. And I love, this is one of my favorite ways to work with it, because emotionality, when it's contracted, it becomes this personal thing. It's like the whole world kind of goes down to this one narrow thing. It's this closed loop that everything I think about just has to revolve around that one triggering situation, scenario, memory, experience. And learning to expand that, to feel it beyond just the narrow confines of me, of my mind. And so what I'd love to do is just go for a walk in nature. Like as I look out in my backyard, I can see the beautiful green of the lawn and the play of the light on the trees. And really turning my attention to focus on that, to bring a broader focus of my awareness instead of that narrowing around emotion. You get a sense of that? There's a sense of broadening experience. You can even take it even further. And this is something that a teacher once told me when I was dealing with a lot of grief, to actually take that grief and spread it out, to let it be shared across the horizon, across the sky, across the landscape, almost like I'm painting nature with that emotion. And it seemed like that would make it more intense, you know, more big, more overwhelming. But actually what it does, it's like taking something that's so painful and you open the door so it can start to spread out, start to disperse. The Buddha talked about this with analogy of a cup of water. Like if I took this cup I have here and put half a cup of salt in it, it would be undrinkable. But I take that same half a cup of salt and put it in something larger, like this bowl, or something even larger, like a swimming pool. That salt gets dispersed and spread out, easily held. And so that's the trick, is how do we allow that sense of spreading out, of dispersal, of letting that be much held by a much larger container. And so each one of us has to find, what is that gateway? How do we access that in that moment? Sometimes it is like looking at the sky and just letting that expand out. Sometimes it's as simple as going into a friendship, a relationship, and saying, can I talk about how I'm feeling, this experience? And maybe saying, you know, I don't really want to be any problem solving. I don't want you to try to fix it. I just want to be heard. I just want to be listened to. And sometimes that, if you have the right person, that allows you just to share what is going on. And that sharing itself takes something that's sometimes so amorphous and so vague, but so powerful in the same way, and brings it into clarity. And you know that someone else is helping you hold this experience. It's not just you. Sometimes ritual can be very helpful. I just touched upon this a little bit, and Tweri will spend a whole month on ritual as a daily Dharma practice. And ritual has this powerful way of taking something that's maybe overwhelming, that's very strong, that's the sense of grief, the sense of difficulty, of trauma, and helping you disperse it out. This is part of the power of story and of ritual, like mythology. A simple one is to take something like a rock and almost imagine embedding your emotion into that rock. And then taking that rock, feeling the heaviness of it, walk around with that a bit, and then placing that rock under a special tree, for example. And so whenever that emotion arises, realize that the emotion is also being held by that rock and held by that tree and the earth underneath it. This simple ritual helps you again expand that focus to move from that being overwhelmed, so caught, so personal around that emotion, help it be spread out, to be held. So this is all of this first suggestion, is to find that place of stability, that sense of ground, to take that pressure cooker off a little bit. Now, sometimes what needs to help you find that ground is actually the second thing I'm going to suggest. And that is in relationship to the story, the details, the personalization of what it means about you. Because sometimes if that's still intact, it just the story and the emotion just kind of swirl after each other. They just kind of build and build like a snowball falling down the hill, getting larger and larger. And so stepping back and saying, okay, what is the story here? What is the belief that what am I believing? Literally, what am I believing in this? What does it mean about me? What does it mean about this other person? Because sometimes I'm so focused on, I can't believe they said that. I'm so angry about that. I go to that much deeper story, that deeper belief, and perhaps even the echoes from childhood and how those just keep continuing to shape this moment. And so this is much of learning how to distinguish between the physical experience of the emotion and the story around it. And so what I mean by that is often emotion is really a compound experience. You know, we all know that sense of that pit in the stomach contraction of fear, or that sense of heaviness, of sadness, or that sense of maybe that bubbling up of joy. Or the sense of just that tension or that red hotness of anger. And we feel that in our bodies. And there's the story, the details, what it means and what we want to say and how we want to fix that, the urge to act from that. And so we put those together, the emotions and the thoughts around it become almost, they really start to build upon each other. And one of the fundamental techniques I teach in the intro class is when an emotion arises, redirect your attention to the physical sensation of that emotion. Redirect your attention to how that emotion is felt as a body sensation. Redirect from the storyline, the details. Because often if you were having a lot of emotions going on and I asked you how you're doing, you would often go into the story. And I'm really upset because my mother's not feeling well, or there's some difficulty in my relationship, or I'm struggling with my work. You share the story because that's where the meaning, the emphasis is held. Imagine instead you said, I'm feeling this contraction in my chest. It just feels like it's imploding and it has this kind of shape of a twisting motion in it. It feels like it's kind of this deep, deep red quality to it. That's a very different way of experiencing emotion. The first way brings us into the story and the details. The second one brings us right into the present moment, right into how that's being felt and experienced right here. That's the place that we have much more influence over it and how we can actually relate to it. Now, yes, the story often does need to be attended to. It needs to be dealt with carefully and kindly, and sometimes it has to be dealt with in a very skillful way. And at the same time, learning how to connect with the body sensation is often an underdeveloped quality or skill in us. Now, if you practice this, you realize that going in this way, going into the body, actually sometimes makes the emotion more prominent, more intense. Because you see that the thoughts kind of keep you a little bit insulated from it. It's like this kind of spinning out. But actually go into the sensations in the body It becomes much more direct, much more immediate, almost more raw. And so we actually feel it more intensely, but for a much shorter time. While the story just kind of like a slow burn, it just keeps perpetuating and going again and again. Especially when we come into the body and ask that question, okay, what am I believing? What's the bigger story, the deeper story that's unseen? And sometimes that drops you into even a deeper emotion that you're not even realizing. I mean, it's been so many times that I've been superficially angry, for example. And I work with it in this way, when I actually finally let go of the story enough to feel it as a body sensation, to actually turn toward the emotion more directly, I'm often surprised and realize, well, there's actually sadness underneath this anger. And once I turn to that sadness, with a sense of tenderness and care and kindness, all this story that's been just so gripping and so prevalent falls away, or at least quiets and softens. And in that softening, there's a stillness, there's a quiet that comes from that. So this is the pathway of using emotions as a way going into a deeper understanding of the beliefs, a deeper sense of how we create the sense of me. This is what we'll focus on more next week, the second talk in this little series on emotions. And all the things we're talking about tonight, you can use when the emotions are much more subtle, much more gentle. It's perhaps easier to find that place of ground and releasing the belief because it's not so intense. But it's still an important, these three aspects I think are very helpful. All right, so these first two are finding that ground, finding that sense of spaciousness. The second is that releasing the story and feeling as a body experience. And the third one is learning to find that core of the emotion. I just alluded to that often by finding that ground and releasing the story allows the deeper beliefs to be felt, to be seen, to be understood. Really what's driving this whole thing. This is part of the skill as meditators. We practice so much with attending to the body and attending to the breath. And then we just take, that's really teaching us and training us in how to take something like emotion or anger, for example, drop that right into the meditation. Let me feel what this is like, this experience, with curiosity, without justification. And as we do that, we start to feel the most, okay, what's the most tender aspect of this? This isn't meant to like be like a probe trying to find the deepest part of the wound, but much more this quality of just a gentle attending, a gentle noticing. Almost like if you were coming upon a campfire that was mostly burnt out, but there's still some heat in it. You would just run your hand gently over this, you know, a few inches away, and you'd feel, where's the coal still warm? And where's the warmest part of that fire? So there's that sensitivity, that gentleness. But where's the most tender aspect? And then you meet that. You simply attend to that. You meet that with compassion, with kindness, with wisdom, with that sense of spaciousness, that sense of releasing the story. And then you ask that tender area, that whichever is the most warm, the most charged there, what does it need? What is needed here? And sometimes it's just simply that acknowledgement, that moment of contact with it. Sometimes it's saying, okay, I need to really talk to my spouse. I need to talk to my child, my boss, my parent. Maybe I need to draw a boundary to take some more space. You know, you let that arise. You let that come not from your intellect, but from that direct asking, that direct turning toward, and you let the answer emerge. It's like that's part of the training when we work with dyads and that investigation. You ask, okay, you ask the question again and again, what's needed? And you let the answer emerge. Not through thinking through it, not trying to rationalize, but just allow it to reveal itself. And then you try it on and see, And if it's the right response, or the deepest response, as soon as you touch upon that, you feel the whole system starting to shift. You start to go back to what Rumi was talking about, that contraction and opening. The opening and the contraction, you start to see that happening. You start to move from being that paralyzed open hand or that paralyzed closed fist. You start to feel the movement coming back into the system. And then you see, oh, this emotion is just something that's arising through me. It's part of being human. It's part of being human that's shared by each person here on this Zoom call, each person that you meet on the street. And we come back to that birthright, allowing emotions to be fully felt and experienced, and allowing them to be fully released. So I hope this discussion has some benefit with working with emotions and bringing that sense of how we work with suffering in a way that leads to the end of suffering. All right, thank you for your kind attention. If you could just sit quietly for a few moments to let those words settle. So what I propose we do now is break up into some smaller groups. And before everybody runs away, you might not want to do that. You're welcome just to stay back here and sit quietly. We'll do this for about 20 minutes. Then we'll come back for a larger group discussion and sharing of questions and dialogue. But for those of you who like to engage with each other, and this is a really powerful way to build sangha and also a powerful way to engage in the Dharma. I think so often we have this idea of our practice, but when we actually have to articulate it and share it, it brings a deeper ownership and understanding. And then also we get to practice the profound art of just listening without trying to fix or alter or change our fellow group members, but to deeply listen. And that's, we learn to deeply listen to ourselves, and we practice that by listening to others. And so these groups, everything that's said in there, we hold in confidence. Again, it's not about offering advice, no advice to giving, just simply listening, giving each person a chance to share. So we'll break you up into groups of probably 4 to 5 people. And the question I'd like you to explore, just how, very simply, how have you worked with emotions in practice through with the Dharma? How's the Dharma shaped how you work with emotions? Maybe some examples, and also ways that it's worked very well, and maybe ways that hasn't worked well. It's like, yeah, I just, whenever I get angry, I just, my practice just goes out the window. I don't know. It's like I've never practiced before. You know, you're welcome to be as honest and as forthright as you can. And remember, your partners won't be giving advice or suggestions, just really listening. Does that make sense? Let me make sure you have a chance to, if you have any, if it's not clear, just unmute and ask. Otherwise, let's put you in groups here. Okay, welcome back, everyone. Looks like there is some, judging by the how long people stay in the groups, it was a good discussion. All right, so we have a chance now to dialogue a little bit. If you have any questions or sharing or comments you'd like to put out, and I can respond to those. You can either just unmute yourself, or you can raise your Zoom hand, your virtual hand. How is it working with emotions as a meditator? What have you learned? What has been struggling, what has been insightful?
Tim, is it okay if I say something?
Yes, please.
I think through my practice, I've come to learn that even when emotions are really strong, knowing that they won't kill me, and that they'll pass, and that the stories, because there's always quite a story, isn't necessarily true, and probably isn't true, or at least, you know, even if it is true, to hold on to it, it causes me suffering. And so that doesn't make sense anymore to cause myself suffering. So when I see the direct relationship between what I'm thinking and suffering, I understand, at least, not that I'm always able to do it, but the importance of letting go of that. And, you know, and the feelings come and go, everything just comes and goes, and noticing that, you know, impermanence.
Thank you, Iris. Yeah, that's such an important piece there, that sense of really recognizing suffering, you know, and connecting that dot. I think that's like a huge part of the practice is that we don't realize that. It's like, and you know, times when I've connected those dots, realize, oh, this belief, this way of holding myself, relating to myself, even the belief in self, that's connected to suffering. When I actually see that, not as I read that, I heard about it, but I actually see it acting real time in my own experience. And I see the release of that. That brings so much confidence to the practice. And it brings such clarity to it. And it brings a level of renunciation becomes effortless. It's like, you know, it's like if we picked up a hot stone and felt the burn, we want to keep picking up that stone, but we so often don't feel the burn. And to connect those dots there. And the way you describe that process, that it often is, you know, just kind of telling yourself, okay, this, I'm not going to fall apart if I feel this emotion. It's not the end of the world. It's not going to be fatal to feel this emotion, even though it feels so intense. We spend so much time avoiding feeling things. And sometimes all we need is just a few moments of connecting with them. You know, again, there's the timing, there's all of that. And that sense of the story that, yeah, you spoke of that well too, how the story, you know, just realizing, okay, this isn't always true, or maybe it's only relatively true, or even if it seemed like it's absolutely true, the holding on, that's what causes the suffering. Yeah, so I just wanted to kind of paraphrase that lovely sharing. So thank you, Iris. What else is out there in the... Yes, Katie, go ahead.
Bring my hand down. Okay. Something I was kind of just thinking about after we were in our group is my attachment to certain emotions. So I've been kind of noticing through my practice that, like, for example, today at work, I'm in some difficult situations at work right now that are very challenging. And I was having all these different meetings with people, and I did have a stressful day, but at the same time, I was kind of noticing my body and how I was feeling during those meetings. And I felt, although in my mind I was like concerned, I felt very calm. And I was kind of noticing at the end of the day, I was like, I think I'm kind of attached to my emotion of worrying, because I feel like if I don't worry and I don't have this like visceral reaction to all these stressful things that are going on, that perhaps like I won't take action at work, or like I won't, again, to use that as an example, like I won't kind of push things forward because I'll be calm and I'll just kind of let things roll and maybe things will kind of fall apart. So on the one hand, it felt like very positive to just be calm and those moments of stress. But I'm noticing that it feels very different for me to be calm in that way, and it feels new, which is cool, but also a little unsettling. And I'm noticing myself like getting attached to prior emotions or the way that I would normally react to that, which would be with a lot of like anxiety and fear and worry, if that makes sense. So it's kind of interesting. Another thing that just seems to starting to fall away a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This, the practices are falling away of things we didn't even realize we're holding on to, you know, and that sense of, I talked about the noticing that belief that's underneath the emotion. And sometimes it's the emotion itself encapsulates that belief. And sometimes it's more, as you were speaking of, how emotion has an actual overall strategy, almost like a meta strategy that we apply in different areas. Like if I don't worry, then things are going to fall apart. You know, I need that energy to keep it going, because that seems to have got me this far. I've been, you know, dog paddling like crazy and keeping my head above the water. And maybe we don't realize that it's only up to our shoulders. The water's only that deep. It's that sense of noticing that strategy. And we often do notice it by that sense of disorientation, or that sense of dis-ease, like, oh, if I don't do this pattern, you know, what's going to happen? And will this still to go? And those are times to be, I think, very interested as Dharma practitioners, because it's starting to show kind of these underlying kind of structures or foundations that we use to create this sense of me, this sense of self. And there's the worry self, which is a very powerful and engaging, you know, manifestation of self. And so that's experimenting and saying, okay, what if I am just stay embodied here, and I can still be concerned, but at the same time, there can still be that calmness inside. And that's when you start to realize, oh, there's this other capacity that can hold this difficult experience, this difficult relationships, situation, and yet there can still be this calmness. There's still this moment holds more than the worry, more than the situation. And then we actually, I think, are much more skillful in how we act.
Yeah. Would you say, just kind of to add a question to it, like, as I'm feeling kind of fear of letting that habitual emotion go, like, could I practice with like faith that like over time, if I see that like things didn't fall apart, that I can like right now I have like a little bit of a distrust around it. Mm-hmm. So could I practice faith, or just trying to be in the present moment? Or I don't know if you have any other advice just with around the fear of letting the emotion go.
Well, let me ask you a counter question to that. What's your normal default around those situations when you're not sure, you're not quite, things are unknown, it's kind of unknown territory?
Usually anxiety. Yeah.
Okay. So, and what's the opposite of anxiety for you?
Peace.
All right. So does faith kind of resonate with that sense of peace or trust, surrender?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. So then when you feel that arising, say, okay, what's kind of opposite of my normal default? Okay, so there's that sense of maybe faith, that sense of peace, of surrender, of trust. And then there's the courage of following that and saying, okay. And sometimes it's helpful to kind of take all the swirling thoughts and ideas and kind of make it more concrete. Maybe write down, okay, what am I, you know, this is what I'm worried will happen if I'm not worried. This is what I'm worried is going to happen if I'm not anxious, you know, and actually articulate those and say, okay, that's my list. Now let me try. Okay. If I maybe do it the opposite, if I just trust and surrender, this is what I'm worried will happen. Make a list there. And then say, okay, let's try surrendering and trust, and then go back and look. It's like, oh, I was right or I was wrong. And that sometimes helps you kind of, you know, make it much more clear and concrete that I have this fear, but it never really happens that way. Or maybe sometimes it happens, but you know, 8 times out of 10, it's okay if I just kind of say, okay, well, this is what's happening. I don't know what to do, but that's all right. I trust. So it's like that. Part of the question is the personalization of the practice, you know, finding what really lands for you. And that's often when I, you know, work with a student, I say, okay, I kind of maybe see what's going to really land for them, because what lands for me may not be what lands for you. So, you know, using that guide, that kind of self inquiry, mm-hmm. and, you know, and generally that our default is the one that contains our pattern of suffering, and our freedom is in the unknown, the untried, unpracticed strategy or way of being.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And ultimately we, you know, get to the point where there's no strategy. We're just simply meeting life just how it is. And that's that freeing up. Like, we don't always have to react this way or have to react that way. But sometimes we have to kind of stretch that parameter so we see really the unpersonal or empty nature of that. All right. Thank you, Katie. Okay, Kava.
Someone asked this question in my small group, and I really resonated with it, so I would like to ask it to you. What if the feeling that I'm, you know, your third strategy of just feel the feeling, let it travel a little bit. What if it's intense when it's happening and not so intense? I can't bring back the intensity.
So you're kind of like reflecting on something that happened while you're in the midst of that, and then you just come back to reflect, it's not so intense.
And I want to feel my way into it, and it's maybe it's hiding, you know, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, on one hand, you know, if something's happened in the past and it doesn't continue to percolate in the present, that's what, where is the problem?
Yeah.
So that's part of it. Maybe, you know, kind of a little bit like Katie's question is like, sometimes we want to make something that was painful and make it a project to try to fix and overcome. So I'm just saying, you know, notice that if that's part of what's running in the background, it's like, well, that was really difficult. I've got to really unpack that. I've got to roll up my sleeves and work with it. But when I try to be present in the moment, it's just not here. It's like, okay, you've already kind of jumped to the end and direction. So there's that piece. So just I just throw that out there just as kind of a check there. Cause it's some of these ways we can kind of get into these blind alleys of, there's always something that I need to do to get myself better. That in itself, you know, okay, notice there's something imperfect in this moment. Okay, so there's that piece. But the other question is like, okay, something happened and I'm trying to bring that forth and it doesn't seem like it's very alive for me, or I don't have much. Is that's the question you're asking? So again, a counter question, is it because you feel kind of checked out from it or numb from it? Disconnected, disassociated?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, it's so painful. Maybe, you know, I don't always know in the moment. I'm just noticing, what, you know, where is that? And that's because I know it's not resolved. So, and it's a little habitual, keeps coming back.
So then that suggests kind of you're bumping up against that edge of delusion for the, you know, from the Buddhist perspective, that sense of unconscious, that sense of that, you know, and part of it, you know, delusion, the way it manifests is that sense of sloth and torpor, that kind of chucking out, yes, that dullness of energies, like, oh, I just don't want to deal with this, or I just kind of even find it. It becomes all amorphous. It's like your mind just kind of taking something that was so intense and blowing it into this big kind of amorphous fog.
Yes.
You know, that, so that's part. Yes. Okay. So we're kind of getting down to that. So And sometimes it's said we have three kind of main strategies of working with something that's, or responding or reacting to something that's dangerous or traumatic in our bodies or minds. So one is to fight against it, you know, fight the tiger off. One of it is to run, to escape. And the third option is just to freeze and play dead. Okay. So this is three ways that it's kind of wired into our nervous system. And so sometimes that third way, you know, makes the most sense when something is overwhelming. I'm just going to, you know, play dead and check out. And so start there, you know, start with what's present. So let's say for, you know, I don't know what the details was are for you or for the other person in their group. Let's say it was a painful interaction with a loved one. Okay. And you start to think about it and it's like, it's, you kind of get checked out. Okay. So start there. Just say, okay, what does it feel like to be kind of spaced out and checked out? Bring awareness to that itself. You know, what is that state like? You know, where does it reside? Is it, what does the mind feel like in that? You know, what does the body feel like that? It's like when you're falling asleep, like sloth and torpor in meditation, sometimes you can pay attention to the actual quality of sleepiness itself. Okay, so we're asking, it's kind of, it's a little bit tricky because you're asking to be present for something that's inherently unpleasant, that's inherently sleepy or dull or unconscious. But not doing it in a way that usually we do is try to judge it ourselves. Okay, I shouldn't be asleep or I should power through this. That just actually often makes the sleepiness more intense. But just say, okay, I'm sleepy. And maybe this is my body and my mind's wise way of dealing with this. This is the best strategy I have right now. And so just pause with that and just feel that. What does it feel like that in that? And often that starts to allow things to kind of reset, allow things to start to reveal themselves. So that's what comes to mind. You know,
that's very helpful, Tim. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, so it's, I could say different strategies, but that's helpful. Let's leave it at that. Thank you, Kaba. Time for a couple more. If there's anyone out there you'd like to share anything. Okay, Kathy, go ahead.
Something that comes up for me a lot, and I did mention it in a small group too. It was this power is sometimes in my story, and my struggle to kind of even recognize that I can let it go or soften around it or move away from it, or that it's not even the whole consuming thing of me. It's a thing my mind is doing. If you had any advice about how to sort that out, it would be helpful.
So the power of the story and kind of how.
Yeah, like if I'm angry, that story will run and run and run, you know. And if I, once I see it, that, oh my gosh, this is kind of churning around in me. And it keeps bringing up my anger.
Yes.
I'd like to stop that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a really clear example of that kind of mind storm that's kind of self-perpetuating in some ways, that the more you think about it, the more angry, and just kind of, it's a closed loop. It doesn't seem like it goes anywhere. And I know that well for myself. And so often it's kind of similar to Kaba's question in terms of there's this level of what's really obvious. There's the details and the emotion. It's almost like we're on the surface of the ocean and the waves are really choppy and there's lots of, you know, what are they called? Is it whiteheads? You know, it's breaking and there's all this stuff going on. And we're just kind of being buffeted again and again by that. If we're able to drop underneath that surface, we can see that there's actually a deeper current that's going on. Okay, and when we can touch into that deeper current, I found this again for myself time and time again, that that superficial storm really quiets down. But until I am able to drop down to that, this just self-perpetuates. And so as kind of the basic rule of practice is you meet yourself where you are. Right. So, okay, right now I'm in the middle of this repetitive thought process and emotion process. Okay, how can I start to relate to it in a clearer way, in a more direct way? So one strategy is say, okay, there's anger, body, where's it in the body? Let me actually touch that in the body. Let me actually feel it in the body and relocate to that. Very paired to that is known as, what exactly am I believing? What's the underlying story here? Because there's not all the details of, you know, Susie said this to Ralph and Ralph said that to Sue, you know, all that stuff. It's much more, okay, oh, I'm feeling misunderstood. I'm feeling, you know, something like it's a very clear statement, like maybe just a few words. I'm feeling hurt. I'm feeling attacked. I'm feeling not seen, you know, and so you say, oh, that's what this keeps coming back to. I'm trying to express this deeper feeling. Then once you kind of get that, then you say, okay, let me just be still with that. Let me feel that and what's going on in the body there. And that often starts to lead us from that really attraction of the superficial details to this much deeper belief. And paradoxically, the more we can feel that deeper belief, the more we can see the inherent emptiness in that. That's where the Dharma comes in. You say, oh, okay, so I'm not being seen. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I didn't feel seen by my mom, for example. It's like, okay. You feel, then you suddenly realize, oh, I'm feeling tenderness. I'm feeling sadness. And the anger is like suddenly dissipated. And I realize, oh, this is just a placeholder for this much deeper sadness. And then that's that turning toward it. I mean, that with as much compassion as you can.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You already said these things, and yet to hear them again, it's so good.
Yes. And then when you're able to follow through with that and see it in your own practice, in your own mind, then you see the pathway. It's like with Iris's first comment is that you connect the dots of the suffering. You say, oh, the holding on, that's where the suffering is. You see, but you have to see for ourselves. It's like, you know, we can say it day in and day out, but, you know, practice next time that happens. Say, okay, I'm going to take this time to practice. And personally, I like to go out and walk. I like to move my body and kind of bring movement to it.
Thank you.
There's one more thing to just say about it is it's... I think almost always it's been surprising for me is when I'm able to do the process we just said. It's surprising what is underneath there. It's like, oh, not like it's something really shocking, but, oh, I didn't even realize that. It's like, and that surprise is actually delightful. It's actually, oh, and that's why you kind of smile at yourself and realize, oh, I've been just kind of doing this to myself. This is self-inflicted and I don't have to keep doing that. Right, thank you, Kathy. All right, maybe one more if there's anyone out there. All right, looks like that is good. Thank you for all your engaged questions and engagement in those groups. I think you can really sense how this is coming alive for you. So next week we'll continue with emotions and, you know, moving more into the investigative quality to see how this emotions really become this gateway to understanding this construction of self, kind of the ultimate cause of suffering. And I'll put a link for offering Donna to Sims and for the teachings. So your continued support I'm very grateful for it on behalf of Sims and all the teachers at Seattle Insight.